Welcome to The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today with Dr. Neil Nathan and Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum. Today, we'll attempt to sort out the good information from the bad and set the record straight on your good health. Healthcare and wellness issues can be so confusing these days, with information constantly changing. Let us help you learn what you need to know. Now, here are your hosts, Dr. Neil Nathan with co-host Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum.
Welcome to the cutting edge of health and wellness today. I'm your host, Dr. Neil Nathan, and my co-host, Jacob Teitelbaum, has got a prior commitment, so he will not be joining us today. However, we have a fabulous guest, Stephen Harrod Buhner, who I'll introduce in just a moment, so that we should have a fascinating discussion that will range widely. I'd like to particularly thank our sponsors, Research Nutritionals, BioResource, Frequency Specific Microcurrent, Real Time Laboratories, and Natural Immunogenics for making this program possible. Since I personally use those products daily in my practice, as our program unfolds, I'll be mentioning some of them when appropriate. We are live, so if you have questions, please call 1-866-472-5792, and we'll be happy to take your questions. I'd also like you to know that we now have our own Facebook page, The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today. Please like us and share us, and also know that you can download the Voice America mobile app, and you can find us on iTunes, Google Playtime, and Kindle, all for free. So without further ado, I would like to introduce to our listeners Stephen Harrod Buhner, who lectures throughout the United States and Europe on herbal medicines, the sacredness of plants, and the intelligence of nature. His unique understanding of these relationships and his poetic ability to write about them is well recognized. He has 19 published books, although I'm told it'll be 20 as of tomorrow, and they include Healing Lyme, which is a well-known book, which revolutionized our understanding of Lyme disease, The Secret Teachings of Plants, the newly released Healing Lyme Disease Co-Infections and Herbal Antivirals. He lives in Silver City, New Mexico. So, Stephen, thank you so much for coming on our program and sharing with us today.
Hi, Neil. Thanks for having me on.
That is just great. You know, one of the things that I most appreciate about you is your unique and what I'd like to say is wide vision of what we're all dealing with. In previous shows, even recently, we've talked about Lyme disease and viral infections and a wide variety of things like that. But you have attempted to understand these infections from the perspective of the organism, which is unique, and of the entire ecosystem in which it is living. And that perspective really shifts and changes how we understand these infections and how we want to work with them.
Well, it really opens up effective ways to deal with them that were just being missed for, almost 100 years now. I mean, antibiotics were first sort of discovered by allopaths and pharmacists in 1926, and then they came into common use in 1946 after World War II. And this whole kind of perspective that we had on bacteria that came out of that older model, well, it's just turning out that it's very, very inaccurate, and our misunderstanding is causing tremendous problems now. You know, within bacteria, probably the two most obvious are the rise of antibiotic-resistant bacteria, which I read just closed, I think, a hospital in California recently because of endoscopes being infected. And then also with what many researchers now are calling second-generation pathogens or stealth pathogens, which is really sort of the Lyme group of infections, which is actually very broad and much more of a danger than most people realize.
Correct. And, you know, when antibiotics first came out, I understand how this evolved. The fantasy, and it was, it turns out to be, was that we were going to be able to eradicate infectious diseases. And the difficulty behind that fantasy is that it did not take into account that bacteria and parasites and viruses have lived on this planet way longer than we have, and they have very sophisticated ways of communicating with each other, sharing information with each other, so that the resistance developed to antibiotics much faster than anyone anticipated.
Yeah, originally, you know, this whole problem comes out of tremendous arrogance, unfortunately, mostly by scientists that were using an older model, what Richard Lewontin, the Harvard zoologist, calls vulgar Darwinism, which I just love his phrase. And it was this incredibly reductive, mechanicalistic view of the natural world. And an added component of that, which was extremely dangerous, was thinking that human beings were the only intelligent organism on the planet. You know, the more I hear, I still hear some vulgar Darwinists and reductive reality police people use that sort of phrasing. And my response every time is, how many people have you met? I mean, if you've met any people at all, we're the most intelligent organism on the planet. We're really in a lot of trouble. So, but the fact of the matter is that bacteria, microorganisms of all sorts are extremely intelligent, in many ways far more intelligent than human beings. And this is coming to be recognized more and more by newer generations of researchers who don't have those old blinkers on. But basically, because we approach the world as if everything's kind of stupid and we're not, and then we thought, well, there's these bacteria that cause disease, you know, and we'll just make these antibiotics, you know, and we'll kill them, and then we'll have a disease-free life. And really, as late as the 1970s, many powerful political physicians were saying, oh, we're going to live to be only like a million years old, and we're never going to die of epidemic or infectious diseases anymore. But, you know, they were completely wrong, because that paradigm doesn't accurately represent the world in which we live. And we're really in the midst now of living with that hubris, and the side effects of that are just absolutely terrible.
Oh, and I mean, it takes so many different forms. The use of antibiotics, many people just think of antibiotic use as relating to if I had an infection and my doctor gives me an antibiotic, that's okay. But I don't think they realize the amount of antibiotics that get into the ecosystem, the wastage that comes from hospitals and clinics, and the amount of antibiotics that are being used on the soil by farmers and that go into feed and treating the animals and animal husbandry. There's a phenomenal tons.
Trillions of pounds. Trillions of pounds have been put into the ecosystem. And if looking at Lynn Margulis's work, I mean, she was just a brilliant microbiologist, and truly bacteria are the underpinnings of every life form on this planet. So Stuart Levy, who's a really quite wonderful bacterial researcher, said that this has, you know, stimulated environmental changes that are unique in unique in the history of this planet, that the kind of changes that are happening are just phenomenal. And, you know, unfortunately, we've been trained through newspapers and all kinds of media advertising to really think of antibiotics as, you know, extremely, they're like candy, you know, you just use them, nothing bad happens, and that's all fine. And at the same time, we're trained to think that painkillers like OxyContin or morphine, for instance, are very dangerous because people can become addicted. And so there's a huge monitoring of these painkillers that is almost fanatical in its orientation. And antibiotics are just sort of allowed to be used in these trillions of tons whenever anybody wants to do it, because they're used everywhere. But the thing is that the antibiotics literally are shifting the entire functioning of the Earth ecosystem in ways I mean, we could have half the population of the planet be addicted to painkillers, and it would do less damage to human civilization and to the Earth than the overuse of antibiotics are doing. You know, I finally got from studying these to the point of understanding that antibiotics are actually wonderful substances, but they should only be used if there is imminent threat of death or disability from something that someone is suffering from. But they're used pretty much prophylactically by every kind of person that can get their hands on them, and they're far more dangerous than anybody has been led to believe.
They are indeed. Listeners may not know that this may sound radical, but there is a huge movement out. I took a course given by Stanford called Antibiotic Stewardship, where all physicians are being asked to really monitor their antibiotic use and not use it for things that don't need it. A lot of patients are assume that, well, I have a sinus infection, I have a bronchitis, I have an ear infection, surely that means I need an antibiotic. And as you know, the vast majority of these, 90% plus, are viral in nature and will not even respond to an antibiotic.
Right. Many of them are viral, and there's other ways to treat them that I've found over the last 30 years to be a lot more effective. But, of course, then we start looking at the use of plants for healing, which is something that the sort of technological medical community is very uncomfortable with. Less so now, it's starting to change. But, you know, growing up, being born in 1952 as I was, they were really rabid on the subject up till just maybe even 10 years ago. And it's still not uncommon to find physicians who are inherently hostile to that. And in a way, the entire, you know, population of the United States has been trained to be rather passive recipients of this antibiotic paradigm. But when, you know, and you're right, when we start talking this definitively and clearly about it, it begins to sound tremendously radical, as if, you know, we're making this stuff up. It's like, oh, we're all going to die. Look, you have to be saved or something, you know. But the thing is that every bacterial researcher in the world is now saying that there is no way to stop what's happening. We face the threat of epidemic diseases more powerful than any that the human species has ever encountered in their history. And David Livermore, who's one of the preeminent researchers in England, has said it is naive to think that we can win. So we're in this tremendously difficult situation. And, you know, you're talking about how you went to Stanford and there you took that course that they were talking about that. They've been talking about this for a good 15 or 20 years, and the CDC has issued statements about it, and doctors in hospitals are routinely told to not use antibiotics. The thing is that it's one of their primary fallbacks when treating any kind of thing that they don't really quite understand what it is, and it's also kind of a shortcut for children's ear infections, let's say, that they're used to doing. And if you take that away, it puts the system into this kind of state of panic because they don't really have alternatives to use, and they're not very well trained in understanding any other kind of approaches. And unfortunately, the decision to use antibiotics is left up to the individual physicians. It's not monitored like painkillers are, and actually, it should be exactly the opposite way. There should be doctors going to prison for overusing antibiotics, and there should not be doctors going to prison for overusing painkillers if you want to look at it, which is the most dangerous dynamic for the society. So it's a very delicate and very tenuous situation that we're in, and it's not going to get any better.
Well put, and I think we'll step off from that into some more discussion around that in just a minute. But first, I would like to commend to our listeners some of our sponsors for the program. And first, I'd like to mention Researched Nutritionals. Researched Nutritionals is a well-known company here in the United States which specializes in immune energy and detox formulations to promote healthier life. They do a great deal of research on their products, and particularly in this context, I'd like to mention that they make a line of materials called transfer factors, which are a different way of stimulating the immune system to fight infections, both bacterial and viral. They make a product called Plasmic, P-L-A-S-M-Y-C, transfer factor, and Lyme transfer factor, both of which are simple things. It's one capsule, you take it once a day, and over a period of time, it can train the immune system to start taking care of viruses like Epstein-Barr, cytomegalovirus, and HHV6, which otherwise would be hanging around in the body to do potential harm. So research nutritionals at 1-800-755-3402 or researchnutritionals.com. And with that, let's go to a break.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Dr. Nathan invites you to go to his website, neilnathanmd.com, for additional presentations and blogs. You can buy his new book, Healing is Possible, New Hope for Chronic Fatigue, Fibromyalgia, Persistent Pain, and Other Chronic Illnesses on Amazon, Kindle, and through all booksellers. Information about personal medical phone consultations or office visits is also available through the website, neilnathanmd.com, as well as at gordonmedical.com.
Healthcare professionals spend a lot of time keeping the rest of us from losing it, getting too stressed out, and from burning out. But who helps the healthcare professional from avoiding the same things? A professional coach can help you avoid burnout, and by doing so, lead a healthier life. Tune in to Dr. Raji Menon's Stress Busters Corner. We're here to help those who help everyone else. We help them avoid burnout themselves. Tune in every Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. Pacific Time on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Follow us on Twitter at Voice America TRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's Voice America TRN.
You are listening to The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today with Dr. Neil Nathan and Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum. If you have a question or comment for the show today, please call in to 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to neilnathan at earthlink.net. Now, back to The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today.
Welcome back to our show, The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today. I'm your host, Dr. Neil Nathan, and I am joined by Stephen Harrod Buhner, who is recognized as an international expert on a wide variety of subjects, which include the treatment of viruses, Lyme disease, and co-infections, and a whole lot of other stuff, with particularly understanding how plants and herbal materials interface with that. Now, we've been talking about how the glut of antibiotics into our ecosystem has made some changes. And Stephen had mentioned what we call stealth infections, which is that the in response to this, intense antibiotic world, the bacteria and viruses and even the parasites have quickly, far quicker than we ever would have thought, evolved into a way of dealing with it so that when they infect us and do what they would normally do, they now have carefully figured out how to weaken our immune system, sometimes before they even get into the system, so that our immune systems are disabled and unable to deal with them. And in this regard, Stephen, I think we can start talking about both Lyme and the co-infections.
Well, the Lyme group of co-infections, and unfortunately because Lyme disease, the Borrelia spirochetes, were the first of this group to be recognized as the source of these kind of strange infections back in the 70s, Most of them have really been, you know, discovered and begin to be understood late 70s, early 80s, mid 80s, like in there. So they're relatively new to researchers. And the stealth pathogens are a really unique group of bacteria. And so they're all kind of called Lyme disease and its co-infections. But really what they are, it's a closely related, they're closely associated group of stealth infections that all have certain things in common. And one of those things is that they can't live freely in the wild like many bacteria. They have to live inside of a host. And they're parasites in that they need certain essential nutrients in which to grow. And so they get into our body and then they begin breaking apart our cellular structures to get those nutrients to then reproduce. And wherever they break those cellular structures apart, that's where the symptoms occur. And there's probably 3, 5, 6, 7, 8, I'm writing about 8 of them. There's probably 10 to 14 that are sort of showing up on the radar. And all of them are intracellular. That is, they hide inside our cells where it's very hard for the immune system to see them. And then once they start moving through the body, they, in hiding like that, they begin releasing small molecule messengers called cytokines that begin to stimulate these massive changes in our cellular structure, like if they're in the knee or the heart or the lungs or wherever they are located, begins to affect that system as they begin to break it apart to get their nutrients. And at the same time, they're extremely clever about subverting our immune function. They will, the part of our immune function that works best with intracellular bacteria is called the Th1, and they're very good at moving it into what's called a Th2 dynamic, which is not very effective against intracellular organisms. And that way they sort of create this sort of autoimmune dynamic that they carefully control to make sure that they can live quite often for years or decades even in a person's body without the immune system being able to stop it. So over the last, you know, the research on a lot of these really didn't get kicked off heavily till about 1985. And it was really in 1995 to 2000 that some understanding began to emerge, but they're still very difficult to treat with pharmaceuticals, and fortunately plants are extremely effective for treating them. One of the things that people typically don't understand is that bacteria are living organisms, and they've been around for about 3.5 billion years, and they've dealt with a lot of problems over that time, a lot of conflict, you might say, and they've developed extremely sophisticated ways of dealing with it. They communicate promiscuously with each other. They teach each other how to resist antibiotics. They change their genetic structure virtually at will to make them, to create a different body type that antibiotics can't affect. The reason why plants are so wonderful is plants are living organisms too, and they get all these diseases just like we do. They can't run away. They can't go to a doctor. They can't go to a hospital. So what they do is they make their own chemicals to deal with these problems as they encounter them. And as the bacteria shift, the plants shift in response, creating new responses to it. So what you have is really kind of a living communication, a pharmacy that changes from decade to decade, in which you can have very sophisticated responses to these kind of organisms.
Yeah, in the previous model of Lyme disease, when Lyme first came out, it was looked at as a bacterial infection like all others. And how do you treat bacterial infections? Well, with antibiotics. And in the case of Lyme, which is one of the slower growing bacteria that we know, that means using it for a very long period of time.
You know, they were still using the old model. That's one of the reasons why some of the researchers are calling this Lyme group of organisms the second generation pathogens. The first generation were things like staph and strep. In other words, the kind of the easy ones to deal with. You know, somebody gets a staph infection, you give them an antibiotic, the staph infection goes away. And of course, that worked really well for quite a while until the bacteria began developing resistance. And of course, there's resistant staph now, but it's pretty much a straight head-to-head sort of a deal. The stealth pathogens, they tried to use that same model, and they would just say, well, you know, we'll find an antibiotic that's good for it, and then we'll do this. But they didn't recognize the sophisticated immune strategies that they had, and that all of these organisms, another thing that they do is that they're able to take on alternate forms to sometimes insist themselves, to take on kind of like a seed-like kind of status where they're very much immune to any kind of antibacterial pharmaceutical. And they also tend to hide themselves in really difficult parts of the body to find. And they'll quite often then cover themselves when they've created a habitat like that with some of our own body cells so that even if an antibiotic is put into the system, it can't really affect them because they're sequestered. And then another thing they do, which is really brilliant, is that as soon as they get into a human body, they create multiple genetic variants of themselves. So it's more proper to think of them as kind of a microbial swarm instead of just this single kind of microbial organism that is causing the disease. So in many ways, the entire model that we've been used to for quite a long time, it just doesn't work when you get to these organisms. They live in a different kind of reality than pharmaceutical researchers have understood.
Right, and one of the key points here is that in doing all of this, one of the things that they do, particularly in Lyme disease or co-infections, is they weaken the immune system of the host so dramatically and thoroughly that it can't respond in normal ways. And so the key component, from my perspective, all of these infections isn't so much that they're infections, but they're immune dysregulations. The immune system is really out of kilter, and it has to be brought back literally online, if you will, in order to make any progress in these infections at all. It's no longer, as you're saying, a matter of, well, we'll just blow them out of the water with antibiotics. They're hiding, they're shifting, they're changing. Whatever we're throwing at them, they are figuring it out faster than we are. So we have to come up with different strategies to do that.
Right, and that was the great teaching of HIV. The AIDS virus, for the very first time, hit the Western technological medical community over the head with a cosmic 2x4. Because no matter what kind of antibiotics or pharmaceutical intervention they used, they found that if the immune system was suppressed to that extent, it wouldn't make any difference. The people were still going to die. Our immune systems have developed, you know, the human species has been around in one form or another, let's say, you know, a million years. And in the form we now recognize it, maybe 50,000 years. And the immune system that we have was generated, you know, through patterns that the Earth has developed as it's been expressing organisms over a very long time. It's highly intelligent and very sophisticated, and it has this magnificent job to do, which has just been overlooked entirely by the medical world until AIDS forced them to begin to look at it. Now, the fascinating thing is, I've spent time probably reading about 15 or 20,000 journal papers about these organisms and then, you know, writing about them in a way that they can be easily understood. And then once we understand that, it's a lot easier to design treatment interventions. And, you know, one of my jokes is I like to say, all the information about these organisms is carefully hidden in peer-reviewed journals, you know, where most physicians can't find it, you know. But the thing is that every one of the papers that the researchers are going into depth in this, they all say the same thing. The degree of illness a person has is inversely proportional to the health of their immune system.
Yeah.
That is, the more unhealthy your immune system when you get infected, the worse the course of disease you're going to experience. Because there's many of these, so probably chlamydia, mycoplasma, and Bartonella are probably the three most widely spread of this group of infections. Anywhere between 100 million and 300 million people in the United States are infected with them asymptomatically. And that's just fine because their immune system is dealing with it. They're carrying these organisms. You know, they're not causing any trouble. But if the immune function begins to fall, then these organisms begin to bloom as an infectious disease and begin creating symptoms. So what you've got is two things up front. You have the individual person's immune system status at the moment of infection, okay? And then the second thing that you have is what the organism begins to do to that immune system once it begins to infect the host. So both of those things really have to be taken into account, and that the modulation of the immune system, I mean, the only way that you can really think about it is it's like these organisms are like virtuoso violinists, and they play the immune system exactly the way a great violinist plays the violin. They modulate it so delicately and sophisticatedly that you have to have to really get through there and really change it around. You have to begin to think like they do, to understand their point of view, to understand what they're doing, and then begin to modulate the body back in response using these very sophisticated plant medicines. Because the plants have been infected by those viruses, they have all of the components in them to remodulate the immune system response. And we're talking about a very sophisticated form of healing that we're really right on the verge of developing as a major paradigm. And I think it's really time for that to happen.
I agree completely. I'd like to pick that thread up in just a few moments and maybe have you give some examples of that. But first, I do need to mention a few more of our sponsors. I'd like to note the BioResource Company, BioResource at 1-800-203-3775. Make a large collection, or import, rather, a large collection of German homeopathics, which are unique in their ability to do a variety of healing things. Now, particularly in the way that I do treat Lyme and the co-infections, they're particularly helpful in their detox kit, which allows the body's detoxification systems to respond to what we're doing in an improved way. So the detox kit remedies include three products, which are ApoHepat, A-P-O-H-E-P-A-T, Renelix, R-E-N-E-L-I-X, for the kidneys, and Itiris, I-T-I-R-E-S, for lymphatic drainage. So that's BioResource at BioResourceInc.com, 1-800-203-3775. I would also like to mention the company Frequency-Specific Microcurrent. The frequency-specific microcurrent, as we've talked about in previous shows, is a unique ability to change the electrical wavelengths to help with detoxification, improving the health of the various organs, and to help remove inflammation. So that's frequencyspecific.com, and we'll go to a break.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Dr. Nathan invites you to go to his website, neilnathanmd.com, for additional presentations and blogs. You can buy his new book, Healing is Possible, New Hope for Chronic Fatigue, Fibromyalgia, Persistent Pain, and Other Chronic Illnesses on Amazon, Kindle, and through all booksellers. Information about personal medical phone consultations or office visits is also available through the website, neilnathanmd.com, as well as at gordonmedical.com.
Good childhood mental health is critically important. Early patterns of emotions and thinking shape children's behavior from preschool into the teen years and beyond. But understanding young kids can be a challenge. Tune in to Child Psych Central, Discover the Kid Brain with Dr. Beth Onofrack. Each week, we will reveal how brain function and child development drive young children's daily behavior. Listen every Thursday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. It's one of the best things that you can do as a parent.
We're making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network live wherever you go on iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
You are listening to The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today with Dr. Neil Nathan and Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum. If you have a question or comment for the show today, please call in to 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to neilnathan@earthlink.net. Now, back to The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today.
Welcome back to our show, Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today. I'm your host, Dr. Neil Nathan, and I am joined by Stephen Herod Buhner, the author of 20 and counting books which have a unique take on understanding the natural world and how we will work with it rather than against it. So we've been talking about the difficulties of antibiotics, the way bacteria and other microbes have changed and altered themselves to make themselves less reactive to what we're trying to give them. And I thought, Stephen, perhaps we could take an example of, let's be more specific about how you approach that, because I think folks would find that fascinating. Stephen's new book on healing Lyme disease co-infections, particularly on the subjects of babesiosis, Ehrlichia, and anaplasma, he tells me is coming out tomorrow. And I've had the privilege of getting an advanced copy of that book. And Stephen, I've thought that your understanding of babesia is the best that I've come across in terms of, okay, let's understand this parasite so that we can approach it from a more ecological perspective.
Okay, so babesia, what it primarily wants to do is infect red blood cells. It's closely related to malaria. It causes a lot of the same symptoms. And by the way, a lot of these microbial pathogens, when we get infected, we just feel like we have a case of the flu. And really, that's the most common kind of thing people understand. But most infections cause that because of the way our body responds to them, and a lot of the substances our immune system begins to create to deal with it. So we feel kind of flu-y and achy and not well. But then, of course, it diverges from that, going wherever the individual organism is going to particularly take it. Now, babesia, because they need substances in our blood to survive, they specialize in infecting red blood cells. So, you know, what I really did was I looked at their life cycle, and to them, our body is the ecological system they live within, and they're specialized in that. They infect every animal that has red blood cells on the planet without exception. So they're specialists in that sense. So the first thing to really understand is that that's what they're really looking at, is that they're wanting to get into and infect red blood cells. And secondly, one of the major defenses that our red blood cells have toward getting infected is nitric oxide. They release nitric oxide is kind of a gas. It's sort of like a gas warfare, like in World War I. There's this little burst of gas that they release, which will kill most microbial pathogens that are trying to harm a red blood cell. So, of course, the very first thing that the babesial parasite needs to do is shut down that mechanism. So they release substances, arginase, basically, which is an enzyme that destroys the arginine in our bodies and our cells that is used to make the nitric oxide. So that way they're protected. So they also, at the same time, as soon as they get in the body, they start altering our immune function. And what they do is they start moving it toward a Th2 rather than a Th1 response. And one of the main ways that they do that is they stimulate the production of an interleukin cytokine called IL-10. And IL-10 is what our bodies release at the end of an infectious cycle, because when we get infected, there's a lot of inflammation in the body. And then as we start to get well, our immune system releases IL-10, moves into a Th2 dynamic, which starts dampening down the inflammation. But by creating, you know, large amounts of IL-10 stimulating its production in the body, that whole Th1 response never gets off the ground. Then they like to find places to hide in the body where they sort of create, you know, an expatriate community. And where they like to do that is in the endothelial cells, like in the liver and the spleen. And that's a thing that they, and so then they get in there, and then they create their little, you know, city state, and then they cover it with red blood cells that begin to cluster around that area so that they're hidden from the immune system. So a number of things begin to happen right away. Because the red blood cells are being infected and then broken apart to get nutrients, there's fewer red blood cells in the system. That means people can begin to suffer anemia, and also that they begin to be short of breath sometimes because there's not enough red blood cells carrying oxygen around the body. Their immune function will tend to be lower, so that they're almost sort of dragging around like they feel like they have a low-level infection of some sort. And when it gets into these endothelial cells that line blood vessels, a big part of the problem with that is that once they begin to cluster red blood cells around those locations, it can block the cell. So they like to be in the blood vessels like that because it gives them access to red blood cells. The liver processes blood, so that's why they like to be in the endothelial cells there. And the spleen processes blood as well, and that's why they like to be in there. But they can get in any location in the body. If they get into the brain and they occlude the veins there, then you can have a stroke. They can cause heart attacks and any kind of a dynamic like that. And they can sometimes cause the spleen to rupture. Oftentimes the spleen has been removed surgically, and they then affect liver function as well. So what you really look at when you're wanting to treat them is, I mean, it's very straightforward. Number one, you need to protect the red blood cells and make sure that more red blood cells are being made. Number two, you have to remodulate the immune system back to a Th1 dynamic. And then you have to protect the various organs that are being affected in the body. And then also you need to increase the amount of nitric oxide that the body's producing so that they can't, you know, get around it by that way. And so that's a very simplistic way of looking at a way to then work with it in a much more sophisticated way than just trying to use an antibiotic to kill it off. So, I mean, there are some great anti-babesial herbs that I use that really facilitate this whole process. One of the best ones is a broad-spectrum antibacterial herb from Africa called Cryptolepis. It's extremely effective. Artemisia annua is another one. Both of these have been used for malaria for millennia. It's also very effective. Ceta acuta is also good, and Bidens pilosa. And these are some of the ones I recommend, but Cryptolepis is sort of my fallback. Now, Ceta acuta is an invasive botanical. It grows throughout the world. It's very common in Florida and around the Gulf Coast and in New Jersey for some unknown reason. But it's a really remarkable herb in that it's it's kind of acts as an adaptogen and protector for red blood cells. And an adaptogen is a plant that if your body is high, is overactive, it reduces it. If it's underactive, it raises it up. But what the CETA does is it is highly protective of red blood cells. It stimulates their production and it enhances their function. So that's one of the first things to do to use to protect the red blood cells. Another great herb in this is a Chinese herb that's been used for many thousands of years called salvia mitorrhiza. It's sometimes called danshin or red sage. And salvia, it's an adaptogen for cytokine production. In other words, if your immune system is producing cytokines that are overactivated, it lowers them. And if it's underactive, it raises them back up. So it modulates the immune system very specifically to become more normal functioning.
And you might use that more specifically to protect the spleen, like you might.
And also, it's extremely good for protecting the spleen from any kind of adverse events. The two herbs I tend to use to protect the spleen are salvia miltariza and ceanothus, which is red root. And the problem in this instance with using red root is it's a blood coagulant, which is exactly what you don't want to use during a babesial infection. Salvia is also fairly protective of the liver. So you've got three great functions right there from that particular herb.
Right.
And so another one I particularly like to use is Withania somnifera, ashwagandha. And it's good for pretty much the whole Lyme group because it specifically modulates IL-10 production. So if IL-10 production is too low, it brings it up. If it's too high, it brings it down. So it by itself will circumvent the whole movement to a Th2 dynamic during babesial infections.
Right. So, Stephen, if I can summarize a little bit.
Yeah.
You can take this whole herbal approach in thinking of it as there are specific herbs like cryptolepis and
artemisinin,
which can kill the babesia.
Right.
Then there's Bidens and Ceta acuta to help support the endothelium and red blood cells.
Right.
Then there's salvia and red root to help support the spleen. There's milk thistle for the liver.
Right.
There's L-arginine to support nitric oxide.
Exactly.
So if we look at the whole ecosystem that we're talking about, there is a way to support each aspect of this. So what you've really got is a beautiful blueprint of how to approach this infection in a unique way. So let's continue this discussion in just a few minutes again. And I have a couple of more of our great sponsors I wanted to mention to you. One is Natural Immunogenics at natural-immunogenics.com. They are the folks who make hydrosol silver, which many folks think of as colloidal silver, which is exceptionally helpful, again, in the treatment of these various infections. It's not an antibiotic directly, and is, we find it a very, very useful adjunct in the treatment of all of these various infections, particularly the stealth infections. The second sponsor I'd like to mention to you is Real-Time Laboratories. Real-Time Laboratories are the folks who have developed a wonderful assay for mycotoxins, mold toxins, and our ability to define that in the body and work with that. Now, particularly in this context, I find that many of our patients with a weakened immune system also have mold toxicity as a component of their infection, which then becomes logarithmically effective, meaning the mold toxicity adds to the inflammatory process that the microbial species are already given us. So that's Real-Time Laboratories at realtimelab.com, 1-855-692-6767, and we'll go to a break.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Dr. Nathan invites you to go to his website, neilnathanmd.com, for additional presentations and blogs. You can buy his new book, Healing is Possible, New Hope for Chronic Fatigue, Fibromyalgia, Persistent Pain, and Other Chronic Illnesses on Amazon, Kindle, and through all booksellers. Information about personal medical phone consultations or office visits is also available through the website, neilnathanmd.com, as well as at gordonmedical.com.
What causes us to be sick? We're not talking about the actual illness or the scientific cause of illnesses. We're talking about your body and health. Listen for the healing whisper of Return to Peace. Each week, host Dr. Marianne Chase shows you how to listen to your heart to identify poor health, stress, and disease. You'll learn how to heal energetically and spiritually, as well as physically. It's time to depend less on the drugs and more on the heart. The Healing Whisper airs live every Friday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are listening to The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today with Dr. Neil Nathan and Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum. If you have a question or comment for the show today, please call in to 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to neilnathan@earthlink.net. Now, back to The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today.
Welcome back to our show, The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today. I'm your host, Dr. Neil Nathan, and I'm joined by Stephen Herod Buhner, the author of 20-plus books on a wide variety of materials which have to do with the ecosystem in which we live, how to understand it, and how to work with it. Now, we've been talking particularly today about Lyme disease, stealth infections and co-infections, and Stephen's given us a very nice example of how he has taken a look at Babesia and used the information from understanding that organism to put together a treatment program that both makes sense and works. And I know that one of your concerns, Stephen, is that for all of us who work with these infected and, to the most part, very sick patients, our heart goes out to them because they have their lives are profoundly affected. They have often spent humongous amounts of money on their health care and are still wrestling with it. So I think part of the message you wanted to provide was that there is hope in this information.
Well, there is. And, you know, there. I kind of look at the stealth infection infected people, they're sort of like canaries in the coal mine. They're signaling to our culture in many different ways that we're right on the cusp of some very difficult times. And they're caught between competing paradigms in a sense. They're caught in the old system because when most people get ill, they just go to their doctor. But unfortunately, very few physicians are trained to understand the reality of bacterial and microbial pathogens, especially these kind. And so, you know, we hear the most horrendous stories over and over and over again of people who have become, you know, formerly very active, creative people, wheelchair-bound or bedridden for years sometimes, misdiagnosed, and none of the treatment things really quite work for them. And so one of the things that we constantly try to get out there and share is that there really is hope. You know, we have never had in the past decade of work a failure, but the thing is, to work with this kind of group of people, it requires tremendous focus of mind and tremendous time commitment. You know, many doctors will only see their patients for 7 or 8 minutes. The minimum session that my partner, Julie, the time she spends with them is an hour to an hour and a half. And it takes that kind of focus to understand what's going on with them. And then we start with this sort of core protocol. But then as modulated to fit the individual needs of each person to address their exact problem. And some of the more difficult infections like Bartonella, it's taken 1 to 2 years to really turn it around when it's really severe. One of the fascinating things about this group of infections is that they're being very closely linked with the development of multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's disease, ALS, and a number of cancers. Because of the way they work in the body, it's turning out that many of those kind of neurological diseases actually, it seems that they have roots in these sort of stealth infections. And so modulating that whole thing, stimulating the neural network to begin to grow new cells to repair the damaged organs in the brain structure, it just takes a while. And most of all, I think it takes healers that have deep understanding of what's going on, that have tremendous compassion for their patients, that are willing to spend the time. And I think those things are just really crucial. And one of the things I also like to tell all of these people is I say over and over again, look, when you go to the doctor, always remember one thing. You've hired them. They work for you. You know, it's like you're not lucky to be able to see them. They're lucky to have you come to them and pay them money to help you. So always remember that's where it is, and never settle for anything less than the health you know that you can have.
And right. I often tell my Lyme patients when they come for their first visit, which is, I hope you like me because we're probably going to be spending a lot of time together.
That's the truth.
So, and I think your point is very well taken. This cannot be done in a short office visit. The complications we're talking about and the interactions between all of these systems require minute care to tease them apart and work with them separately. And there's no way to do that in a short visit.
There's not. And also, as you well know, there's psychotherapeutic dynamics. There's heavy psychological impacts from this group of diseases. And you have to work as a healer across a broad range of disciplines. You have to deal with the psychological dynamics with the people. They're afraid, they're in need, and they're quite often their social functioning is highly affected.
Yeah, absolutely. Stephen, I am so appreciative of your joining us for this program. You have a wealth of information to share, and hopefully we can have you come back again. So thanks again for joining us. I'd like to let our listeners know that next week we will have Frank Schellenberger, who is a world expert on ozone treatment, and that's what we're going to talk about. So for all of you out there, thank you so much for listening. For Stephen, thanks so much for joining us today, and all of you be healthy.
Thank you again for joining us for The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today. Please join Dr. Neil Nathan and co-host Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum again next Friday afternoon at 5 p.m. Eastern Time and 2 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. And this week, apply what you've learned today to enjoy better health.